Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 95 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we have some Basset hounds getting active.
This is what we're trying to get that scenting ability back, to show that they can do it. And they're not cripples, and they can do what they're supposed to do.
And we have the Dogcast Radio news. But before all that, we have an interview with Dr. Denny Freed about the book his dog Genevieve has written. It's called Small Dog, Big Life, Memoirs of a Furry Genius. And since Denny is the best person to tell you about both the dog and the book, I'll leave it to him.
I'd be happy to. Just for the listeners out there, little Genevieve, she's a 7-pound Papillon, and Papillon is French for butterfly. It's a specific breed of dog, and because the ears stick straight up and look like butterfly wings, that's how they became known as Papillons. And Genevieve barktated her memoirs to me, and all I did was translate them from doggerel into English. She also made me type them because she didn't want to get carpal paw syndrome. That's very, very painful in dogs. But she did let me write the foreword to her book, and I'll just read the beginning of the foreword. Books about dogs are a dime a dozen, though your local bookstore charges a lot more than that for them. These books describe the different types of breeds, explain how dogs think, teach training methods, and tell sappy stories about dogs who have shown their dumb humans the true meaning of love and then promptly trotted off to the Rainbow Bridge. Since these books are written by humans, dogs know that they are completely ridiculous. What the world of letters has needed for a long time is a book about humans written by a dog. And along came Genevieve.
Excellent. And it is Genevieve's take on life, isn't it? It's how she sees life.
Yeah, she's an adorable little dog. Incidentally, those listeners who are by a computer can see a photograph of her on her website, which is pretty easy to remember. It's dogtellsall.com, because Genevieve does tell all in her book, dogtellsall.com. And, you know, we humans, we think we're the bee's knees, but when you stop and really think about it, what we look like to an intelligent little creature who has nothing better to do than study us 24 hours a day, some of our behaviors can be pretty absurd, and so Genevieve talks about that in her book.
Now, let's go back and start at the beginning, perhaps, and we'll sort of go through it, you know, in order, as she puts it. But we have one of the first chapters is the hidden toy ploy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how that deals with how Genevieve came to be with you at all in the first place, and that did make me laugh.
Well, I love dogs. I grew up with one. I had one when I was young. But after getting out of my own in the world and working and traveling, I never wanted a dog because it's just a lot of responsibility. It ties you down. Mm. I got married, and my wife was also a dog lover, and she grew up in rural Alabama and always had dogs all over the place and just couldn't get used to the idea that now she was without a dog. And so we had an ongoing, let's call it a discussion. I don't think it was actually an argument, but it was a discussion about whether or not we could or should get a dog. And of course, I was saying that we had no business getting a dog. We both worked. We liked to travel. And Katrina took the opposite position. Well, after about 10 years of this, one day I was walking by her clothes closet. She'd already gone to work. And I saw like a little transparent plastic bag in the back of her closet. And it seemed like there was a little basketball in there. It didn't make any sense to me. So I was nosy. I went back and looked in this little bag. And it was a little toy basketball, a little plastic chew bone, and a leash and a collar. Now, I'm thinking, who's this for? We don't have a dog. We ain't getting a dog. However, it was early December, and my one hope was that Katrina had bought this as a gift for some friend of hers that had a dog. So I called her up at work. I'll never forget the conversation. Called her up at work, and I said, Katrina, you know that plastic bag you have back in your closet, the one with all the doggy stuff in it? Who's that for? No answer. Now, let me give you a hint. When you ask somebody a very, very sensitive question and are met with complete silence, this is a red flag, a very bad sign.
Yeah.
So I sat down, said, Katrina, you know that plastic bag you have way back buried in your closet? The one with all those doggy toys in there? Who's that for? No answer. And I said, you didn't get that stuff for the dog that you know you can't have, did you? And her magic words were, I couldn't help it. Well, I was reminded, I'm old enough to remember these old black and white movies that used to be on TV. And sometimes in those movies there would be a woman who couldn't have a child for one reason or another, and would go batso and start decorating the baby's room and go completely insane. And that's what I was reminded of with my poor wife, Katrina, wandering through the pet store buying doggy toys for a dog that she couldn't have. And I realized I had a choice. I could let her get a dog, or I could send her to a shrink, and I knew the dog would be a lot cheaper. So I said, Katrina, I give up if it's that bad. Then I said to her, let me ask you a question, Katrina. What do you want a dog so badly for? Just explain it to me. And she said to me, her loving husband, I need something to love. So that was the double blow of the day. So I said, I tell you what, Katrina, you can go out. I know you want a Papillon. Get it from a breeder. Do your research, and the project is all yours. And so after a few months of networking and visiting breeders, we ended up with this little 3-pound fluff ball named Genevieve. And that's how Genevieve arrived at the house. And the hidden toy ploy, which the chapter is named after, was that little hidden basketball, which was about the only way that I think Katrina could have induced me to get a dog. Argument wouldn't have done it, but that trick did it.
Well, good for Katrina. You see, for me, my husband was sort of, we don't really want a dog yet, you know, and all this. And when you think it's practical, which was a mean thing to do, because I desperately wanted a dog, but I knew it wasn't practical at that point. So to turn around and say, well, you can have one when you think it's practical, I thought was a bit mean, really. But playing my own game. And what did it for us was that I just got so desperate. I really wanted a dog and couldn't keep putting it off. And the time, you know, I was at home and my daughter was old enough then to sort of deal with a dog around. And what did it for me was tears, you see. I just got so upset. Anyway, okay, you can have a dog.
Do you know what I've determined after many, many years of thinking about it is that most good things in life are not practical.
Well, quite.
I mean, look at husbands and wives, right?
Yeah. Well, like children. I mean, if you actually knew what you were getting when you had a kid, you wouldn't do it, would you?
Well, I don't have kids because I did think about it, but I have Genevieve. I think Genevieve is actually more work than a child, and probably smarter as far as she can tell.
I was going to say, because you have this idea of sort of what having a dog will be like, and particularly in those early days, it's often very different from how you envisaged it being. And even the first night Genevieve came home with you, that was, you know, she was trying to make her mark right then, wasn't she?
Oh, no doubt about it. She was frightened. I mean, a little 2 months old. I mean, I felt so bad for her because on the way home in the car, I think she'd only ridden in the car a few times to the vet, and she was huffing and puffing and panting and shaking. And, you know, a 2-month-old little creature just torn away from the only family and environment she ever knew. And now all of a sudden these two strange humans are driving her somewhere in this machine that makes noise. It was pitiful. And we got home, and we carried her around the house to show her around. I don't think she liked the way we had the house decorated. It wasn't to her taste. But we took her out for a walk, and she sniffed around and determined that there were a few snakes and rabbits and squirrels and about 3 other dogs that lived in the area. She peed in about 44 places just to let everybody know that she was on the scene. And then we attempted to go to sleep, which she didn't like that idea, so she howled all night long. Mm-hmm. Until my wife got up and cuddled with her on the couch and finally fell asleep that way. So that was the first night.
Yeah, that sounds very similar to when we brought Star home, our little Bichon. And as you say, you're bringing this sort of little fluffy ball of nothing home, and then they all hell's let loose when she get home, and it's just your whole life's disrupted.
What always amazed me was that Genevieve was incorrigible as a puppy. She would not mind, was untrainable. If you try to pet her, she would nibble or bite at your fingers. She would never come when called. If you try to put the leash on her, she would run away. And we tried all the standard training tricks. And like I said to Katrina, how can it be that this 3-pound, 2-month-old, tiny creature has absolutely no fear and no respect for a 170-pound, full-grown human being? Mm-hmm. I couldn't figure it out, but she had none. We finally brought, after a few months of getting nowhere, we brought a professional trainer in to deal with Genevieve and to try to teach Genevieve how to mind and teach us how to make her mind. And that's one of the chapters in the book, mm-hmm. which is one of Genevieve's favorite chapters, about how she taught this woman what's for. But and when the woman left, she said, "You've got a tough dog there," which Genevieve, that made her very proud.
Well, yes, because you see, you're saying she came in and she was very helpful, but Genevieve definitely didn't think that, did she?
Well, Genevieve resisted everything that she tried, and she pulled some tricks on Genevieve, which Genevieve had never seen before. For example, the woman grabbed Genevieve, held her tightly, and then held her up in the air. And Genevieve's little legs are waving back and forth. And Genevieve puts it in the book. She didn't know whether they made parachutes for dogs, but as soon as that woman left, she was going to check into it. So it helped. And the trainer also told us to keep a leash on Genevieve all the time in the house. And Genevieve learned that she couldn't get away from us because, you know, we could always get the hold of the leash. And so eventually she didn't run away because she knew that the leash was like her ball and chain. Yeah. So we did the best we could for about a year. And then after a year, Genevieve got a bit sweeter. I don't know whether that's generally true, but maybe she just outgrew her puppyhood.
It's really odd, though, because, I mean, as I say, we have a Lab and a Bichon, and the Bichon is definitely harder. Not aggressive, I'm not saying that, but just harder than the Lab, much more of her own mind. And you bring this little lapdog into your house and you think, oh, it's going to be sweet and lovely and pliable and biddable. And they don't know. They have no idea they are this sweet-looking little lapdog.
Well, and also what's funny is as aggravating as a dog, a stubborn dog can be, and they are aggravating sometimes, it really is endearing because you have to laugh.
Yes, yeah. And it made me admire her because, you know, as you say, you look at them and you think, you're a little ball of nothing and you're just taking life head on and going, yeah, bring it on.
Yeah, right. No fear, Genevieve, you know, now she weighs 7 pounds, although she hates when I either tell her weight or her age. She weighs 7 pounds, and she backs the big dogs up. I mean, there are some neighborhood dogs here who we know are not going to do Genevieve any harm, and Genevieve will get right up into their face and scream at them. I'm not even talking about a bark. I'm talking about a scream. Oh. And these big dogs, as you've probably seen it, they back up. Now, if a big dog encountered another big dog who was barking, they'd probably get into a fight, but there's something about the little dogs yapping that I think the big dogs think that the little dog must know karate. Or else, why would this little thing be in my face like that? It doesn't make any sense unless they know something I don't, so they back up.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you've mentioned she hates when her weight is mentioned at the vets as well. She says that in the book. And, you know, it's such a funny book because, for example, when she's talking about being at the vet and she says, well, I hope they're not paying because I can hurt myself for free.
Yeah, I mean, Genevieve noticed that every time we brought her to the vet, and the vet always did bad things to her, you know, whether stick her with what Genevieve called hurt sticks, or blow stuff up her nose, or press on her body in various places. And then when we were all done, we would go to the front desk and give them a little piece of plastic, and then they'd give it right back. And Genevieve says in the book that She doesn't know what that piece of plastic is, but at least we're not giving her, giving the vet any money, because Genevieve could stay home and hurt herself for free.
Yes. I love that.
She just hates the vet. I mean, from the moment you walk in the vet, they have a big scale right in the lobby. And so what do they do right away? By the way, Genevieve starts screaming. As soon as we pull into the vet's parking lot, Genevieve is already yelling. And when we bring Genevieve in the front door, the receptionist can't even see Genevieve yet around the corner, but she always says, "That sounds like Genevieve." And then we bring her in. And what do? They put Genevieve on this scale right there in the lobby near the waiting room and call out her weight, 6.5 pounds, 7.25 pounds. And Genevieve just, it's disgraceful. And like Genevieve says, how would that receptionist like it if Genevieve pushed her onto the scale and, you know, yelled out her weight to everybody? I don't think she'd like it very much. So it's, they just don't have any respect for dogs. Another thing Genevieve complains about is the way we humans use language. I don't know if you ever thought about it, Julie, but we have a lot of expressions that are negative expressions that use the canine in it. For example, so let's say a restaurant isn't as good as it used to be. What do we say? It's going to the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You're feeling lousy, so what are you? You're sick as a dog.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you come home from work and you are dog tired.
Yeah.
Incidentally, if you're dog tired, why do you take a cat nap? That doesn't make any sense. You know, you've been dogging it at work, so your boss puts you in the doghouse.
Yep.
Even though you've been working like a dog. Yeah, at a job that's not fit for a dog.
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody treats you like a dog, and oh, the worst thing you can say is you're acting like a bitch. Stop wolfing down your food. Get your paws off me.
Yeah.
You know, it goes on and on and on. And then to make it worse, absolutely worse, is if something's absolutely perfect, what do humans sometimes say? It's the cat's meow? Come on.
Not fair, is it?
it's just not right.
No. Well, Genevieve is redressing the balance, isn't she?
Well, she tries. I mean, she actually has recently started a canine activist group, and it's called Dogs United Against Discrimination and Unfairness, or DUDU for short. And the slogan is, you're either walking with DUDU or stepping in it. And she's got campaigns against discrimination against dogs, like this this language thing we just went over. That's one of her campaigns. She also, I don't know if you've ever read about it, but in California here, a few years ago, the American Indians, rose up in protest against all these California high school and college teams that had Indian nicknames like Redskins and Warriors and Chieftains and Apaches, and the Indians felt that it was demeaning to the American Indians. And the California legislature actually passed a law saying that you couldn't name one of these school teams any of these insulting nicknames. And Genevieve thought it was terrific, but she thought the problem was a lot wider than that. Think of all the sports teams with canine nicknames. We've got the Bulldogs, the Terriers, the Greyhounds, the Timberwolves, hundreds and hundreds of American sports teams with these canine nicknames. You know, you got a bunch of silly humans running around in shorts chasing a ball, and you're naming them after dogs? No, that's not right. So that's another one of her campaigns.
Well, I would think she'll be successful, having read her book.
Well, she's got a strong voting block here.
Yes.
You know, I think there's 50 or 60 million dogs here in the United States. They're all quite literate, and they're all interested in politics.
Yes.
So,
well, she's one to watch, isn't she? Definitely.
Yeah, she is. She keeps me on my toes, and I just wish she would pay me a little more. Oh, she's tight, that little dog, I'll tell you. Incidentally, Genevieve has a chapter, another chapter in her book. Again, the title of the book is Small Dog, Big Life, Memoirs of a Furry Genius. And you can see Genevieve on her website, dogtellsall.com. She's got a chapter called Dog and Driver, where Genevieve gets tips to other dogs about how to behave in a car.
Yes.
And Genevieve likes to drive. As soon as we get in the car, Genevieve gets in my lap, puts her paws over the top of the steering wheel, and helps me steer. And I know it's dangerous, but what can I tell you? Genevieve likes it, and you should see the faces on cars coming in the opposite direction when people see this dog driving the car towards them. It's quite amazing. But I have to tell you that I think Genevieve's a better driver than most of the people here in Florida.
Well, you might say that. I couldn't possibly comment.
No, but I will say that.
Okay.
It's pretty bad here. Another tip. So Genevieve said that a dog should always be in the front seat. If you can't drive, at least be in the front seat, because that's the seat of control. You don't want to be in the back seat. If you're in a car and you see a dog walking along the sidewalk with its owner, you should scream at that dog, because the poor thing, it's out there walking when you're driving in the air conditioning. You just scream at the dog because it's a contemptuous thing out there. If you see a dog in the back of a pickup truck, scream at them. Make fun of them, because, again, they're relegated to riding on the outside in the sun and the heat and maybe the rain. But if it's a very big dog and you feel that it's possible that you might encounter them some other time on a walk, you better leave them alone, because, you know, if they remember you, you could be trouble. There's another thing, too, Genevieve's noticed, is that out on the roads, there's a lot of cars that seem to have been cut in half in some weird accident. They only have two wheels, and they make a lot of noise. And they're usually driven by 300-pound humans, all named Tiny. Don't bark at Tiny. Okay? Now, there are other two-wheeled cars out there that don't make any noise, and the drivers make these funny little circular motions with their feet to make these cars go. And these mm-hmm. these people, they're usually scrawny, and their name is Marvin. Scream at Marvin. As a matter of fact, if you can get your owner to open the window so you can hang your head out and wait until you're right alongside Marvin, scream. Sometimes you can make Marvin tip over. And that's very, very gratifying.
I would imagine that is.
Marvin doesn't like it.
No.
And as a matter of fact, I have been Marvin on occasion, and yeah. I didn't like it.
I bet. Now, you've mentioned there the sort of observations that Genevieve has of humans. And one of my favourite areas of the book is the whole area sort of towards the end of the book, where she's sort of looking at, do humans think? And looking at evidence for human thought and all this. And I love the chapter, Test Your Human's Intelligence. Could you read us the bit at the beginning of chapter 16, which is from Fido the Elder?
Yeah, sure. You see, Genevieve does get a bit philosophical here. If you read books written by humans about dogs, they invariably talk about how intelligent dogs are, what their thought processes might be like. Scientists actually do argue about whether or not animals think or they reason. I mean, this is just absurd. And it's humiliating when Genevieve reads books like this and sees these people arguing about whether animals can think or not. So Genevieve turns the tables here, and she's got a chapter entitled, Do Humans Think? And the chapter starts out this way. The question of whether or not human beings think has intrigued canine philosophers for thousands of years. For example, we have this from the writings of Fido the Elder, circa 576 BS, which is before Snoopy. And here is the quote from Fido the Elder. I question not that humans feel pain and have emotions that are in some basic form akin to our own. Certainly, most all of us have at some point in our lives bitten a human and then experienced great guilt at having done so. Such guilt would have no logical basis if we did not assume that the unfortunate creature was experiencing pain of a type similar to ours. However, it is a far different and more difficult question as to whether humans have the capacity for thought. Those of us who live with humans are well aware that their behavior generally does not seem directed by any overriding self-consciousness or goal-oriented concepts. And yet, there are those times when we must stand back and regard with awe those actions of human beings that are so downright stupid that we cannot possibly attribute them to instinct or mere biological reactive mechanisms. Yes, my fellow canines, it is precisely at these moments that we cannot help but conclude that these beings are blessed with a primitive form of thought. So that's where the chapter begins. And then Genevieve herself examines the evidence pro and con for human thought. And I'll give away the conclusion. The evidence is rather slim for human thought, but because it can't be proved one way or another, she feels it's only right to give humans the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm. Very kind. And
incidentally, along that same line, Genevieve, having studied human beings for now 11 years, concludes that the dumbest woman is smarter than the smartest man. Now, you know, I was really excited to translate her book in the beginning when she asked me to do it. I thought it would be a lot of fun, and also I needed the money. And so we started the project, but it wasn't too long before I realized what a low opinion she had of us. And then when she made me type that, the dumbest woman is smarter than the smartest man, I said, that's it, Genevieve, I quit. But she had me on contract, and her lawyer's a Doberman, so I was stuck.
She's tough, isn't she?
And you know, I'll tell you something funny, Julie. When I tell people that Genevieve has concluded the dumbest woman is smarter than the smartest man, the opinions on that seem to be divided along gender lines. I can't figure that out.
No, that surprises me, really. I can't see anything wrong with it myself.
I kind of guessed that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing for, you know, if we have, as you say, there are literate dogs out there. I love the test the intelligence of your human chapter.
Well, again, very often in these books written by humans, there might be these little intelligence tests that you give to your dog to see how smart your dog is. And again, that's humiliating. It's insulting. So once again, Genevieve has turned the tables on us humans, and she's devised an intelligence test for dogs to give to their humans. Let's see. I will read just the introduction to that chapter, which is called Test the Intelligence of Your Human. Mm-hmm. In chapter 16, we concluded that in spite of evidence that is less than overwhelming, it's best for us to assume that humans do think. This naturally leads to the next question, how intelligent are human beings? This issue of human intelligence is a fairly new field, since it is only in the last few years that dogs have come to believe it worthy of study. Based on my own extensive research conducted during years of living with humans, I've developed a test that you can use at home to measure how smart your own humans are. Make sure your human is well fed and relaxed before beginning the test. Don't get frustrated or impatient if he or she doesn't seem to be performing well. Keep in mind that no human does well on every part of the test. Treat it as a game, and above all, have fun. And there are about 20 tests here. Let me pick out one or two just to... Here's one. So this is the direction for the other dogs to administer the test to the humans. While you're out walking with your human, pee on a car tire right in front of its owner. Your human, and now there's four choices, your human A, yanks the leash and yells at you. Well, if that's what your human does, that's worth 0 points. Your human B, wipes the tire off with a tissue. Well, that's only worth 1 point. C, your human sniffs the tire. Now we're getting somewhere. That's worth 2 points. But D, your human pees on the tire too? That's 3 points. Now, obviously, the more points that are accumulated during the test, the more intelligent your human is.
Brilliant. I mean, she obviously has a very questing and scientific mind. And another part that I just really liked was where she's experimenting with her barking.
Well, yeah, she is a very scientific dog. She was out in the backyard one time, and she barked at a squirrel real loud, and as soon as she barked, this tree limb fell down, come crashing down. First it scared her, but then she realized that she is such a powerful little thing that her bark can make tree limbs come down. So she was very proud of that. And the next time she was out in the backyard, she barked, expecting maybe this time a whole tree would come down. Nothing happened. And she barked again, and nothing happened. Now she was confused, because the experiment didn't seem to confirm her original hypothesis, and it kind of dashed her ego. Well, we were all sitting around watching the news on TV that night, and lo and behold, they were showing film footage of a tornado that had passed through the Midwest and blew down whole towns. And then Genevieve realized that this time when she barked, the effect was long distance. So she really did have a powerful bark. It was just that the effect wasn't local.
Yes. Brilliant. The other bit that I think will appeal to a lot of dog owners is getting Skeeter.
Oh, getting Skeeter. Genevieve has about, it's hard to estimate, I would say at least 70 toys. She's very well stocked. The reason why she has so many toys is because when you give her a new toy, I don't know whether how your dog is or other dogs out there, but Genevieve is very fickle. She will play with a new toy for about 5 or 10 minutes, and then maybe the next day or two you can get her to chase it. But after that, it's done. Mm. The toy is history. It's old news. And so then we have to get her a new one. So she's got maybe even 100. I don't know. And they all have names. And Genevieve learns names very quickly. So we occasionally will say, you know, go get the basketball or go get the peanut. Well, in the beginning, her favorite toy was Skeeter, which is like a little green frog. And we would throw Skeeter into the corner and say, Genevieve, where's Skeeter? And she would go and run and get Skeeter. And that was fun for a few days. And then she decided the Skeeter had nothing more for her, and that was it. But every once in a while, because we bought the toy and didn't want to waste our money, we would throw Skeeter again and say, Genevieve, where's Skeeter? And Genevieve is sitting there thinking to herself, Skeeter is lying right there. I can see it, and you can see it. Why are you asking me where Skeeter is? And then she would start to get worried that maybe we were going blind. So she'd have to run over and get Skeeter and bring it to us. Then we'd say, yeah, good girl. So then she realized that we weren't hard of seeing at all. So she decided that what she would like to do someday is to start tossing things of ours around, like, you know, our car keys. She dreams about this. That's one of her favorite dreams, is where she throws the car keys into the corner and goes, where's the car keys? Go get the car keys, and makes us go fetch the car keys. Where's your wallet? Where's your wallet? Because it's just, you know, why do we keep on throwing the same damn thing around all the time? She knows it's there. She can see it. We can see it. It does not make any sense to her. So that's why very often when you try to get your dog to play with you and they ask her where certain toy is or go get the toy and they just stare at you, it's not that they're having trouble understanding. It's just they're going to themselves, why?
Mm-hmm. I mean, she does give away a lot of doggy secrets, doesn't she?
And a lot of dogs are mad at her for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, she makes that comment that she knows that divulging some of these canine secrets might make some of her doggy colleagues mad. But she realized that in order to get people to buy her book, that she just couldn't give you the same sort of stuff you could get at home. It had to be some dirt in there. So she let it all hang out for commercial purposes. In other words, she sold out. Let's be real here.
Uh-huh. But it pays your wages, you know. She can pay you then.
Yeah, very little, as I mentioned before.
She's blowing it all on toys from the sound of it.
I don't know. I think she's invested in mutual funds.
Oh, that's good then. That's...
Yeah, well, it hasn't been good.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, that's bad then. We'll edit that and make it sound like I know what I'm on about. Oh, that's bad then.
Well, I don't know whether you're familiar with the phrase, the dogs of the Dow.
No.
Well, there's a certain way of figuring out which stocks are performing and which aren't. And the stocks that are in the Dow Jones average, the big industrial stocks, the ones that are performing lousy are called dogs of the Dow. And I think those are the ones that Genevieve invested in.
She won't want them called that, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really funny... interesting book. We can't, I mean, you know, I think we've probably done justice to it, but we can't sort of put everything in. But as I said to you, that other people will identify with different bits, but the two bits that really shone out to me to be like our Bichon were the how she likes to kill cookies. She doesn't just eat them, she likes to kill the cookies and stars like that, you know? And she's like, no, I'm going to get this, and she knocks it round and plays with it, and she's really killing it. And the other thing was, that, and it really made me laugh, the Genevieve's agility and the claw windmill.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get, and that is so like our Bichon. It's just like, hey, hey, I'm here, notice me.
Well, with the cookies, it's really funny. If you throw Genevieve a treat and she runs up to it and sniffs it, if she doesn't like it, she walks away.
Mm-hmm.
If she likes it, she will start to bat it around, kick it, throw it with her mouth, stalk it, walk around it, ignore it for a few seconds, and then pounce on it. And like you say, it's like she's killing the cookie. And I said in the book that it's good training in case she needs to kill her own cookies someday.
Well, yes.
But the thing is, the more she likes it, the more she plays with it, the longer she plays with it. So if she really likes the cookie, she could be batting it around for 20 minutes before she eats it. And then as far as the agility is concerned, you know, some people ask, you wouldn't believe this, Julie. Occasionally people ask, oh, does she do any tricks? They talk looking at Genevieve, does she do any tricks? And I say, does she do any tricks? She wrote a book. I mean, what do you want here? You want her to give you her a paw? You want her to roll over? Give her a break, will you?
Mm-hmm. You can't do that, can you?
And no, we don't show her. And no, she doesn't do agility because she's got her own agility course laid out in the house here. You know, it involves what we call the zooms, which is when your dog, for no apparent reason that we can understand, starts to run around and around the room in a big circle at about 140 miles an hour. And what Genevieve says is, you humans who don't understand how we feel when we get to the zooms, what would you do if you won a gigantic lottery? You'd run around the room like crazy. So that's what we do for no good reason because we're just happy. So that's what the zooms are. So she's got some other agility events, including the claw windmill, which is if the human's not paying any attention to you, you sit on your haunches and you begin to claw the front of their leg in a windmill motion. And you have to get the depth just right because you want to leave marks, but you don't want to draw blood. Very precision. It's very precision maneuver.
Oh, that is so familiar, honestly. Oh, dear. Yeah, that, they do get that just right usually, don't they? And they do, as you say, leave a crisscross of marks, but no blood. Oh, excellent. Denny, thank you ever so much. Is there anything else that you want to say about or that Genevieve would like you to say?
Let me give the title of the book, which is Small Dog, Big Life, Memoirs of a Furry Genius. And Genevieve was always quick to point out that she's the furry genius, not me. It's available on all the online booksellers. I know in Britain, Amazon.co.uk mm-hmm. has it, so you can certainly get it. And it's really a book of love for us that love animals. I don't pretend to be a dog whisperer or anything like that, but Genevieve's personality really did write the book for me. If Genevieve was a different kind of a dog, if she was sweet and docile and passive, mm-hmm. I would never have written that book because it's her spirit that yeah. really inspired it. So I think people who love their dogs, cats, any animal really will be in sympathy with the sentiments expressed. And it's good for a laugh. And as Genevieve says, she doesn't know why humans laugh, but it seems to be a healthy thing for us.
Definitely. Well, we should be healthy when we've read that book, definitely.
Very healthy. Julie, thanks so much. We enjoyed it.
Oh, thanks, Denny.
It certainly is a book that will give you a laugh. We have all the links for you to find out more about Genevieve and Denny on the Dogcast Radio site, where we also have a review of the book. I think Genevieve sounds like a challenge, but a lot of fun to live with. And I can't wait for her next book. An average city dog lives approximately 3 years longer than an average country dog. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. So, How much did your dog cost?
Perhaps you should ask, how much would you have been prepared to pay? And what's the most you think a dog should cost?
Well, in China, the most expensive dog in the world has just sold for £350,000, which is around $557,000. The dog in question was a Tibetan Mastiff, so admittedly the millionaire buyer did get a lot of dog for her money. Her reason for wanting the 18-month-old dog was that it was the perfect specimen of its breed. I wonder if the dog knows how perfect and expensive he is.
One dog who is confused about exactly what he is Chippy, a Jack Russell, who is under the impression that he's a cat. Chippy has lived with cats all his life. He rarely barks and even takes his toilet breaks in a litter tray. He was taken in by the Cats Protection League in Gloucester, UK, and is available for adoption along with his feline best friend, Annie.
Rehoming a dog is usually an occasion for celebration, but there was a case in the UK recently where it wasn't smiles all round. Shane and Janet DeLacy went on vacation, leaving their cherished Lhasa Apso, Scamp, in the care of their daughter, Sean. Unfortunately, Scamp escaped from her holiday accommodation, so Sean contacted the council in case she was picked up by a dog warden. Time passed with no word on Scamp, and when her parents came home, Sean had to break the sad news to them. Meanwhile, the council had indeed found Scamp, and due to the fact they had no record of notification of her being missing, they held her for 7 days and then offered her for adoption. Although Scamp did have a microchip, the contact details were out of date. On the day her owners arrived back from vacation, Scamp went off to her new home. By the time the new adopters were notified, they had become attached to Scamp, and they did not want to hand her back, and the law was on their side. In a surprise happy ending, though, the adopters decided to give Scamp back to her original family, and the council pledged to help find them another suitable dog. I suppose the moral of the story is to keep your microchip contact details up to date.
Two dogs have been lucky enough to survive being stuck underground for several days. In the UK, a Jack Russell cross emerged from a rabbit hole on a traffic island in the middle of a busy road. Amazingly, he avoided being run over and was taken to a local veterinary clinic. Apart from being underweight and dehydrated, the young dog seemed fine, and authorities are hoping his owner will now claim him. Meanwhile, in Australia, a dog got stuck in a cave. The added complication was that the King Charles Spaniel in question was deaf. Rescuers inserted a tiny camera into the small hole the dog was trapped in and fed him water to keep him alive. After 5 days, he was finally freed when compressed airbags were used to move rock out of the way.
And finally, in Ithaca, New York, dog owners have a chance to make good use of their dog's waste by composting it. Leon Kotchian, a professor of plant biology at Cornell, who has a Labrador, began to wonder if there was an alternative to the plastic dog poop bags that end up in landfill. Now, corn-based bags from the Biobag company have been made available at a dog park, and special bins are being emptied weekly. The waste will have some other compost mixed with it, and then research will be done on the best use of the canine compost.
So, do you think the compost will be mixed with bark?
And maybe we will be able to use it to grow cauliflowers. That's all from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
The dog name Fido comes from Latin and means fidelity. Did you know that Basset Hounds were originally a working dog? I do have a soft spot for the characterful breed, and when I heard of a Basset Hound trial happening not too far from me, I really wanted to go along. Here's Kath Whitehead, secretary of the Midland Basset Hound Club, to explain what the day was all about.
Well, we're trying to get people to believe that Bassets actually can work.
Mm, yes.
You know, rather than just be pampered show dogs, you know, that they actually can follow a trail and prove that they can be fit for purpose, which is the idea behind it.
Yeah.
And we've got a couple of things today. We've got a little trial, which is a fine sausage, which we've got some cones with holes in the top with a sausage. And they can have a little wander around there, get the noses in tune, hopefully, find the sausage, get a little reward.
Yeah.
And then we've got the beginner's line, which is 100 yards, which is following a lovely mixture of liver and tripe mulched up together in water.
Which apparently appeals to the bassets, yeah.
Oh, well, mine this morning, when I got the liver and tripe out, he was making the most appalling noise. He really wanted to be in it.
Yeah.
And then we have actually got a quarter of a mile one in the next field.
Now, saying that, how do you lay the scent?
Well, we tried this morning with a siphon and putting quite concentrated blobs down the line, but that didn't seem to work so well. So we've gone back to the method we tried last year, which is soaking a cloth in the scent and dragging it with a piece of string down the line.
Yeah.
And that seems to be working better.
Yeah.
Which, you know, seems a bit odd because it'll be quite concentrated to start with and it'll get less concentrated as you get towards the end. Whereas the blobs of the scent was fairly consistent all the way down.
Yeah.
But that seems to be working better.
What they like? Yeah. Well, they like, don't they? Yeah.
Some of them are actually demonstrating that they are following it.
Yeah.
Because we've purposely put a little kink in. You know, and if they don't seem to be following it, because the scent can blow, you know, off the line, and if they're not actually looking as if they're following the straight part, if they make an effort to make the turn, you know they're following it definitely. So that's what we're looking for as well.
Now, most of the dogs here, I don't know whether it'll be the same answer for all of them, but has there been much training, much preparation?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah. So it's sort of relying on that, on the dog's natural...
Yes, yeah.
So obviously they have this natural scenting ability and they were used as a hunting dog.
Yes.
How, you know, specifically were they used?
Basically in pairs. Not originally in a pack, but hunted in pairs. With one huntsman, basically, years and years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, now, in this country, bassets tend to hunt as a pack, you know, and you'll get one that'll pick up the scent and the rest follow, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, but this is just something we thought. Bloodhounds do it, beagles do it. So I thought, why not pass it? Yeah.
Now, I can't finish without talking about your footwear. Because can you tell us what you've actually got over your shoes?
Two Morrison's carrier bags.
And though it's fetching, it's very effective. What's the point of that?
The idea of it is not to get my scent mixed up with the scent that we're laying.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, we've got a lot of people going up and down, so it probably isn't being that effective, but that was the idea behind it.
And very fetching she looked with her plastic bags on her feet. Trish Wells, the vice chairman of the Midland Basset Hound Club, was judging the trial. So I grabbed a word with her to find out how the day was going.
Bit like the Curex egg. Good in parts. Some of the dogs have absolutely no idea what they're supposed to be doing. They're just out for a lovely walk with mum or dad. Mm. And some of them really have understood what they've been after. They haven't known what they're doing, but they've understood what they're doing. There's a subtle difference.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's nice to see them actually following not where the trail was laid, but the scent of the trail, which is off to some side because of the wind that we've got today.
Yeah.
And it's just blown it slightly. And to see that a dog is actually working, not on where it was laid, but on where the scent is so much better.
So you know he's actually working, he's not working sort of from
memory or following the handler or anything like that, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it's just pass or fail, isn't it?
Just, yes. Yeah. Yes, there's no shades. If they don't do it, they don't do it.
Yeah.
So yes, it's either a pass or a fail.
Yeah.
And it's very sad sometimes when when you have to feel the butt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
But then most of the dogs here, this is very new to them, isn't it?
It's new to us as well.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. We had a fun day last year and it was raining and it wasn't very nice, but it was fun and the dogs actually enjoyed it. And some of the dogs really, really they worked.
Yeah.
And we thought, well, as a club, we wanted to make our own trials and see if they can be accepted, because Bassets are not allowed to hunt anymore.
Mm.
And so we thought, well, if we can make sure that we do have the ability, that they don't lose the ability.
Yeah.
And some of them have it naturally, as I've found today. And some of them have no idea what it's all about at all. But even the pack hounds have to learn how to hunt. A pack hound that's never taken into the pack, never taught how to hunt, isn't necessarily going to know how to do it.
No.
Even though it might have the ability to do something, it doesn't necessarily have the ability to hunt properly.
Yeah, to stick to sort of one scent and follow that one scent kind of thing.
That's right, yes, yes. Yeah. And it's quite interesting when the dog first lifts the scent, when it first gets the scent, because it stops and sort of, ooh, and goes back and has a look or a sniff. And then after that, and then they lose it and they look a bit. But sometimes the owner will pull them on or encourage them to go on, and that then the dog's lost the scent until it maybe picks it up again and it goes, ooh, what have I got? Yeah.
And that's allowed, is it, that encouragement? At this stage.
Yes.
But if it was a like more serious or more advanced stage,
then the dog would have to do it, yes.
Yes.
Colin Wells is Trish's husband. He told me more about what was going on.
All these dogs are absolutely raw to this. They've never had this type of smell up their nose before. And so, basically, they have to be trained. They just can't do it like that. You know, they've actually got to be trained to the scent. So this is really the starting point. Today, you know, as I say, we're trying to get back the hunting ability, and really just to show that the Basset can do what it was trained to do. And one of it will be, we've got smooth ground here at the moment, and the other one over there is a ploughed field. So the dog has got to be constructed right to be able to get over the ploughed field and still follow the scent, as it would do if it was hunting a hare. You know, it won't make any difference then.
Yeah.
And the scent is in almost a circular movement out there, because when they're hunting hare actually don't go straight down the field.
Yeah.
They go around in a circle.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, and so the Basset will go around and they will all follow it round there.
Yeah.
And this is what we're trying to get that scenting ability back, to show that they can do it. And they're not cripples and they can do what they're supposed to do.
Yes.
I'm just hoping that it will take off and eventually get recognised by the Kennel Club as a working trial.
Yeah,
that'd be brilliant, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the aim.
Yeah.
And the Midland Basset Hound Club has started it.
Colin is the secretary of the National Basset Hound Club and he knows his dogs. He gave me a lesson in Basset anatomy, using his bitch, Quarterbin Black Witch of Angmar, to illustrate.
Today you'll see all different sort of shapes and sizes.
Yeah.
And she is not too heavily boned. She's got a bit of what we call daylight under the body, which gives so that they can get over the plough. And they've got a deep chest, but not over deep chest.
Yes.
And fairly long, nice long ears, but not too long.
Yeah.
Because they're only supposed to go just beyond the end of the nose. They're not supposed to be 4 miles long. So.
not going to do any flying with them, kind
of
thing.
No, that's right. So, yeah. And basically that, for the hunting type of Basset, she is more the ideal.
Yes.
In the show ring.
No.
No, nobody would even look at her. No.
So I guess it's like what you're saying. It's, in the show ring, it's the exaggerations that are becoming the problem, isn't it?
So yeah,
but if you're looking for a dog that will work to purpose,
that's what we were looking for. Not not too much loose skin.
Yeah.
And this is what the Kennel Club are trying to get through and get the breeders. But the trouble is, can't do it instantly.
No, you can't.
No, it's going to be sort of 20 or 30 years before we actually get back to what it was in the mid-70s.
Yeah.
And she's very much like they were in the mid-70s.
Yeah. Now, another question occurs while we're talking, because I think possibly my picture and a lot of people's pictures of a basset hound is very much a couch potato. So is that affected? We can hear some lovely bassets in the background. So is that affected by the way they are bred? Or, you know, is that just a myth? Or
what's the truth of that?
A basset will take as much or as little exercise as you care to give it.
Mm.
And survive quite nicely. They can be a couch potato, but they will also hunt all day and still expect to walk when they're finished.
Wow.
Yeah. They have stamina. This is why the chest is fairly nicely sprung, and they're a big, deep-chested dog. They've got plenty of heart room, lung room, and they have the stamina.
Yeah.
And this is what it's about.
Yeah.
John Broom had worked his basset, the delightfully named Norman, and I asked him how it had gone for them.
Yeah, the basset's worked, and I was very, very pleased the first time. Picked the scent up, worked on the scent, followed the scent, and it was absolutely fabulous. So we got a pass today.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And how much preparation have you done with her?
None whatsoever.
She hasn't revised for the test?
Not at all, no, no.
No.
Didn't seem to get the time, but no. They've naturally got the instinct, and with a little bit of encouragement, they can pick up the general idea quite quickly.
Yeah.
Obviously, we put a scent down today, which is a particularly strong smell of tripe and something else, liver, I think.
Yeah.
So they're going to pick that up. But they should be able to pick up an animal scent quite easily.
Yeah.
It's naturally born in them.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just discovering it.
Yeah.
Because they were actually, were actually actively worked, weren't they?
They were, yeah, very much so. And funnily enough, I was talking to a customer of mine, working in a shop where we sold dog food, and talking to a customer the other day who had lived over in France for a while and watched them working in France.
Yeah.
And over there, they hunt for wild boar.
Oh, right.
They use them for tracking the wild boar for the hunters.
Yeah.
And they work in either singly or pairs, not in packs. And she said it's absolutely incredible to see them with the nose down, picking the trail up, and they're not scared of the boar either.
No. Although, you know, they're a short dog, they're a big dog, aren't they?
They're a big dog. I think the way to describe it to most people is they're as big as a Labrador, but on short legs.
Yes.
And they weigh around about, 35 pounds and 60 pounds in weight, depending on the dog.
Yeah.
Certainly 35 is the norm.
And I guess most people's image with a basset hound is sort of quite a relaxed dog that sort of is going to be happy to be on the sofa. Is that the truth?
It's absolutely true, yeah. There's 2 hours at home at the moment. They're flat out.
Yeah.
One will definitely be on the sofa. Yeah, I think they're quite deceptive. If you work them, they're happy to take as much exercise as you give them.
Mm.
On the other hand, they're quite happy without any exercise at all.
Yeah.
They just sit on the settee all day and lie down and chill out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they like to sit on your lap, which, with a small dog, not a problem. When you've got 3 or 4 and they jump on you, you can be squashed.
Yeah.
And they do prefer the settee to the floor.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, well, that's the right place for a dog, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
John also had his adorable bloodhound with him, and he had some interesting insights into the way the two breeds of scent hound work.
But yeah, I've done a lot of research, particularly on the American website for the bloodhound, to see how they go about the job. And it is actually different to the way the basset will work, because the basset's looking for small game on the ground and following a scent on the ground. The bloodhound's nose is particularly good at following humans, and it can pick up a trail perhaps 3-4 weeks old.
Yeah.
And they work a little bit differently, because they don't just work on the ground, but they follow the trail in the air.
Yeah.
So that's why they're good at following people over water.
Yes.
It's because they're picking it up off the top of the water.
Oh, right.
They're not picking it up off the ground.
Yeah.
So it is a different way of working, and I must admit, when I first had him, I found it unusual to walk him. Because rather than a basset, he would walk more or less by your side, under your feet a little bit.
Yeah.
He zigzags. But he's actually working to pick up the scent even. And I discovered quite quickly that you need a longer lead on him than the basset, so that you can let him go, otherwise they pull you from pillar to post.
Yeah.
Well, they are very, very strong.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
But I was very pleased with them today, and a little bit later we're trying the bigger trail.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that works.
Excellent.
But they will follow what we call cold heel, so that's sort of following the footsteps of a person rather than having to have a scent.
Yeah.
So all these films where they cross the river to get away from the dog, it wouldn't work with a bloodhound, would it?
I wouldn't say it wouldn't work, but not necessarily. No, they can actually pick the trail up. Because what they would do is work them from one side, hopefully pick it up on the wind. If the wind's blowing the other way, they'd go to the other side of the river.
Yeah.
They'd follow the bank along until they picked it up again, the trail.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the record was trailing something for about 180 days to get someone. So it's quite interesting when you...
Yeah.
Especially when you get on the American websites.
Yeah.
Because obviously they still use their dogs quite a bit. And I know his father's an American dog.
Yeah.
He was one of the first litter to be born in the UK from artificial insemination.
Yeah.
And the first litter ever. And of bloodhounds, I should say.
Yes, yeah.
And his father's actually an American dog, and he's a part-time police dog as well.
Oh, right. Yeah. Isn't it the bloodhounds that's the only dog whose evidence is admissible in a court of law in America?
In America, yes.
Yeah.
You'll find it is on the webpage. I was quite surprised at the laws about them.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are laws about how long they can track a trail for and things like that as well, so it is quite interesting to see what they're allowed to do and not allowed to do.
I thoroughly enjoyed meeting so many Bassets and watching them at work, showing they can do what they were intended to do. And I hope the Midland Basset Club's efforts are recognised by the Kennel Club. For photos of the dogs in action, check out the Dogcast Radio site, where you'll also find a link to the Midland Basset Hound Club. Based on an average lifespan of 11 years, the cost of owning a dog is $13,350. Girls Aloud singer Cheryl Cole has been in the news recently, proclaiming that she only trusts her mother and her dogs. Poor girl. But then it grabbed her more than her fair share of headlines and column inches, so with her new album given some excellent free publicity, I don't suppose for a minute that she'll be crying all the way to the bank. That may be hard, but then I'm just a cynical human, not a trustworthy canine. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
They crossed a Malamute and a Pointer. The new breed is a moot point, which is, oh, well, it doesn't really matter.